Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The weekly wrap on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. The Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Bharati Jagdish and Ryan Huang. We're putting spotlight now here in Singapore. I mean, what are your thoughts, Bharati, every night for the past week when you see the COVID case numbers that's being reported by MOH?
Well, as the numbers rise, while there is an acceptance that, you know, this is the reality under endemic conditions, we have to be more accepting of the fact that the numbers will rise, but we won't have to go into a circuit breaker again.
Yeah. You know,
this is just the way of an endemic.
Yeah.
You just have to accept it. There is a part of me that does feel some anxiety, and there is a part of me that constantly asks the question, is it time for a circuit breaker yet?
What will it take, right? And, you know, what are the implications that come with it? So the numbers last night, 1,504, that's up from the previous high of 1,457 that was reported on Wednesday. Unfortunately, also, we have news that two unvaccinated Singaporean women aged 71 and 93 have also died from COVID-19 complications. So the death toll now is at 70.
Indeed, and the latest daily total that we're seeing is the highest since the pandemic began, up from the previous high of 1,457 cases reported on Wednesday. It looks indeed like the end of COVID might take a while more to arrive on our shores. The Singapore government, of course, has been actively rolling out schemes to help both individuals and businesses. The question always is, how long more can these schemes be sustained? Surely funds will eventually run out. And if there ever is a need for another circuit breaker, it's got to be thought about very, very carefully because of its impact on businesses and individuals, the workers in these businesses. Joining us this morning, Dr. Felix Tan, political analyst at the Nanyang Technological University. Good morning, Felix.
Hi, good morning.
You might wonder why I'm so familiar with Felix. We used to work together, right, Felix?
Yeah, that was quite some time ago, yes, indeed.
I can call you Felix, right? I don't have to go with Dr. Tan throughout this whole interview. Nice to be interfacing with you, although what we're talking about today, not so nice, yeah? We've seen many support schemes, though, rolled out by the government to help local businesses and individuals. For instance, the Temporary Relief Fund, the COVID-19 Support Grant, the Courage Fund, JSS, don't forget that, and the rental rebates for businesses. Tell us more from a political standpoint, to what extent is it a feasible idea for the government to continue giving out such support?
And indeed, that's a very, very good question. I think it's a very, very good concern for a lot of us. I think that the funds, there will be a substantial amount of the fund to support all these grants that the government has in place. But like you rightly put it, we are not too sure how much left there is, how much more left there is, and how long of the runway do we have, you know, before we run out of cash. But I think it will give credit to the government. They have already put things in place. But I think what is more concerning is how are we going to move forward from that. When the day comes, when there is no more funds, you know, for these grants, then what happens next? I think that is what a lot of us should really work towards. We can't always just simply rely on these grants every now and then. I mean, for the past, I think, almost coming to 2 years, and these grants are still ongoing. If we are going to move into endemic, I think we have to shift out of giving these grants because, again, like you rightly put it across earlier, you know, I don't think we can afford another lockdown, you know, another heightened alert, for example. Businesses will be affected. Our livelihoods will be affected. So as much as there is insufficient funds, I think at some point we, as Singaporeans, we have to move out of that mindset that we have to only depend on the government.
I mean, one of the popular funds has been the JSS support scheme. 43,900 employers reported in the news to receive those payouts. So that works up to about 900 million from September 30th, 570,000 local employees involved there. And if it's, you know, up to the imagination, what kind of other options or solutions should businesses be looking at instead of depending on government support?
I think one of the ways is actually to transform their businesses. I mean, this is the best time, if not now, when, right? You know, this is the best time to think of new ways, new creative ways to move out of the so-called status quo. You know, yes, you could be in, let's say, F&B, but what else can you do, you know, to improve your businesses? What else can you work on, you know, in order to set new directions, you know, in your businesses? I think that is one way that businesses can do at this point in time. Secondly, also divest maybe their funds, you know, in what other areas can they put their funds into as well. I think that is something that we can actually look at. I mean, this is a long-term goal. This pandemic or endemic that we are looking at is going to stay around for the very long, for the long haul. So there's only this much that we can do. And I think it's time for us to be really creative, to think out of the box. I think for far too long, businesses, at least in Singapore, tend to be, you know, trapped in a little box. It's either this way or no way. Mm. And if otherwise, we depend on the government. I think we can't keep moving on looking at that alternative. We have to find our own alternative.
I guess the government also, in giving out grants and funds, needs to make a very clear distinction between handouts versus funds that are disbursed to empower businesses to take all the steps that you mentioned earlier, right, Felix?
Exactly. I think we have to understand that Singapore is not a welfare state. I think we have to get that in our heads that, you know, the government is not here to provide all the time. Yes, it's unfavorable to Singaporeans and also to businesses, but these are perhaps, and most of them are private entities. And the government can only do this much to sustain the business community in Singapore. And this is the best that we can do. So a lot of it, a lot of the things that needs to be done predicates on the business community themselves to make the move, to find that shift. And how are they going to do that? You know, they have to sit down, they have to think about it very, very clearly and thoroughly and realize that this pandemic or this endemic is here for good.
Now, Felix, perhaps the numbers we're seeing now are acceptable under endemic conditions. I'm talking about case numbers, of course. But surely there's a threshold. Even as we accept that the numbers will rise, we shouldn't discount the possibility that the situation could escalate to a point where a circuit breaker may again become necessary. I mean, of course, the infectious diseases experts are the go-to experts on this. But let's not forget that there's a political dimension to this, too. The government has to go by the clinical facts. It also has to bear in mind the interests of businesses, which is what we're talking about today, but also consider how secure other members of the public might feel about a circuit breaker not being implemented in spite of the rising case numbers. In your opinion, how should the government be calibrating its approach to this situation?
I think one of the ways that the government can do that is through education, through campaigns, perhaps, you know, in that sense. Now, one thing that we have to be clear here, the cases will rise. You know, at this point, it's 1,504. Tomorrow, we might see 1,830. We do not know, but, you know, it's going to rise, you know, over the next few days, weeks, months. But the important thing here that we have to understand, I think the cutoff point, at least for the government to realize, is when the number of cases for serious illnesses because of COVID-19 goes up even higher, so let's say 1,000 or 500. I mean, at this point in time, 163. And there are those that are in critical condition, you know, in the intensive care unit and ICU. And that's about, I think at this point in time, it's about 23. I think when these numbers start to rise, that's when we will have to be really, really concerned, and not the actual absolute number of how many COVID-19 patients there are, because most of them are having mild symptoms and most of them are staying home. So I think there needs to be a realization, or the government will need to inform the public that what we really need to look at are these serious illnesses because of COVID, not the overall number of people being infected with COVID-19. I think, again, at this point in time, I'm not too sure whether the multi-task force is doing a good enough job in that aspect of things.
Oh, Doc, then we got to talk about this last bit. Just a final question to wrap things up. We know there's some kind of a budget for health, right? Where clinics are concerned, subsidized GP rates. How long that'll last is anyone's guess, but there has to be a priority there. My question is, then how do you budget mental health? How do you put a budget for mental health? This has been in the spotlight, and we've seen, yes, there are some initiatives by the government. Largely, the initiatives are by companies, go speak to an in-house counsellor, that type of thing. What about a regular hawker, or what about the uncle that's loitering, or, you know, because he doesn't want to stay home, he wants to be downstairs at the void deck talking to his friends? How do we cater for mental health?
I think mental health is a very important question at this point in time, and we should not just simply focus on the fallout from COVID-19 itself. I mean, there are a lot of other issues, but let's try to, you know, bring the discussion back to COVID-19. I think I have, again, a very anecdotal. I have, you know, seen such cases before, and some are rather tragic as well. And I think there is a need to, you know, reach out in a way that we can inform them and, you know, just to let these group of people know how to deal with it. I think we need to identify, even as neighbors, as friends, as colleagues, as just people that we all know. I think that's very important. That's how we reach out to these people. I think at this point in time, most of us are already expecting some form of cabin fever. You know, we're either stuck at home, working from home. You know, we can't have any sort of interaction. Groups, you know, meeting outside is limited to 5. I think these will take effect on our mental health. And I think you cannot put a number to really how much the budget for COVID-19 mental health, you know. And it's going to be a long-term thing because it might be now, it could be next year, it could be a couple of days. People will be affected by it. And I think there needs to be a budget in the sense that it's compartmentalized into what areas can they put their resources into to help these people along, to be able to be in line, to understand the situation better. You're rightly put it, the hawkers, the uncles on the streets, they may not know the best. And I think there needs to be a group where we can reach out to these people. There needs to be a social worker to reach out to them, or just people who are trained in those areas to talk to them and let them understand the situation, the gravity of the situation.
I guess the first priority should be destigmatize the issue. Second, self-awareness and education efforts, public education efforts, certainly. Thank you very much for that, Felix. Dr. Felix Tan, political analyst at Nanyang Technological University. Thanks for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.